Podcast with a K. Well, hello there. I'm Christian Corley. And I'm afraid I'm here again all alone in the virtual studio that is Beyond Casterbus's very own Podcast with a K. However, I'm delighted to tell you that James McLean and Brian Terranova will be offering their thoughts on the fourth episode of Doctor Who Series 10, Knock Knock. My own thoughts, I enjoyed it. Certainly not the best episode of the four so far. In fact, probably the worst episode of the four so far. I'd probably, you know, if I was throwing figures around, I'd probably call it 6.5 out of 10. That's our neck of the wood. Great setup. Lovely setting. I like the twist at the end. Not so keen on the resurrection or kind of rescue, I suppose, from the walls of the house of Bill's housemates. I felt that if they were able to, you know, withdraw from the walls, then so might the older inhabitants of the house. Seems to make more sense to me than just those guys escaping. I mean, it's not as if they hadn't gone to the trouble of casting them. And there's no reason why they couldn't have retained their facial qualities, you know, their youthfulness, could easily have been written in. But they opted to just release the few, so we'll go with that. But clearly, the highlight of the episode, beyond the wonderful house, which is a lovely, great house. I'm not entirely sure how much of it was CG, a great setting, internal and exterior. The highlight is obviously David Suchet, the wonderful casting there of the former Poirot actor as the landlord. Now, Suchet's been around for years and years and years and somehow has never done Doctor Who before. You know, his career kicked off around 1970. So, you know, he's had plenty of time to do a Doctor Who. Apparently, he took the story without having read the script, that's good, because it shows that Doctor Who's still got that that reputation among actors. I think, though, the story was by the story was by Mike Bartlett. Now, he's best known for the... We've been a playwright. He's contributed to Dr. Foster, which starred Saran Jones. And he's done various other bits and bobs over the years. I think this is probably his first televised piece of genre, though. He's done a few historical things, but I'm pretty sure that's that this Doctor Who was his first sort of fantasy or science fiction piece. Perfectly good piece of work. Very good script. As I say, I think some of the problems are probably in the direction more than anything else. Probably with so many characters, there's an issue with getting to care for that many of them. And it's fair to say that the Bill-Doctor relationship wasn't quite there, because she was getting a bit Clara and wanting, you know, the room away from the Doctor. But Capaldi, excellent as ever. The Capaldi-Suchet scenes were excellent. And I loved the conclusion when we discover that Eliza is not the landlord's daughter, but his mother. I think it's a fantastically clever little twist. Now, we don't get to find out where the bugs come from. Clearly they're alien, or... Then again, with Thin Ice, we had a creature which we presumed was alien, but maybe it isn't. Just an undiscovered creature on our planet. But so that's it's a nice little episode. It doesn't put many feet wrong. It's enjoyable. It maintains the style and rhythm and pace and tone. And lightness isn't the right word, but that kind of ease of direction in cinematography that harkens back to older series, back to the RTD era. I think, especially with the lighting as well. So that's all there from the previous episodes. It doesn't keep... there is something missing from Knock Knock that doesn't put it on a par with Smile and Thin Ice. But perfectly good episode. And a nice addition to the series. I mean, look, it wasn't Time Lash, was it? Come on. That's what I think. Anyway, other people may think differently. Here's our very own James McLean to tell us what he thought about Knock Knock.
For the second week running, you'll find me in my little triangular prism. It's either a triangle or a prism, I guess. The thing that they had in the three doctors. But there's no triangle there, there's no prism either. And I'm not old, and I'm naked. So what are we talking about? Knock, knock. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a feeling this felt quite a Russell T. Davies era. I enjoyed that. It was an odd show because it kind of felt like the Russell T. Davies era in the way that it felt like it was a little edgy for kids. It certainly felt like it had that kid element to it, that kids could probably watch this. It had a little bit of a chill factor, but there was a sort of slight light breeze to it. I thought the Doctor worked well in again. I thought Capaldi, I wanted to say Cushing, but I think Capaldi, rather than Cushing, because Cushing wasn't in it, and I don't particularly rate Cushing compared to Capaldi. Capaldi was really good there. His role was fairly withdrawn, but it didn't feel like he was playing a different character. I kind of found in Series 8 that it felt like he was playing different versions of this potential Capaldi Doctor. Here it feels like the same Doctor, but they've either inserted him fully into the story or he's taken a back seat, and I think that's fine. Bill was fine as well. I would have liked them to sort of perhaps had a little more of an interrogation with her position that he wasn't welcome in this side of her life. I thought it came across as sort of fairly hurtful. He seemed initially, certainly Capaldi seemed to respond to it in his acting as if he was quite hurt, as if he acknowledged that he was the old person who she didn't want to have around. And while I suppose that is understandable from a young person's point of view, I think from an audience point of view, it made her look a little uncaring and callous, which, you know, young people can be. So I don't think it actually has an... It's not a point against Bill. I just kind of felt it was something that would have been nice to have had confronted with the audience. So the audience could sort of get a little more... they could get a little more into that issue, because it's quite a big issue there. And it wasn't one that was really explored. I thought, still staying on Pearl Mackie and Bill, I thought, once again, her reaction shots were really good for a companion. The very ending, the end scenes where she was watching one of her friends being absorbed into the floor, there was a look of horror on her face which felt fitting for the situation. It didn't feel like it was a fun moment. It didn't feel like it was exciting. It was horrific to her. And that, I think, was really important for the character and something that has sort of been missing pretty much since 2005. So I'm kind of nice to see that it's sort of being handled really well here, that this isn't just a joyride, that she does respond to these situations as a normal person would respond, with absolute horror and fear. I thought it was kind of good with the story at the end, because I was a little frustrated that she was the last one to be taken, because it felt like there was this... the sort of preciousness, the immortality of the protagonist, of your principal cast, that you know that they're going to get through the story. And everyone else could be absorbed, but she couldn't. And at the time, I was starting to feel like this is a problem, because it makes her look like she has some more worth, she has a bigger worth, an arbitrary better worth than everyone else. For some reason, just by pure random chance, despite she's the most important of the characters, and she's the one left at the end. Yet at the same time, if she had been absorbed, she'd have still come back at the end anyway. There was that sort of, the reset came in and they were all alive. So in a sense, having that reset meant that her being the last one fitted nicely with the way the story was going and her input into the story, which should naturally be fairly large, without it feeling like the story was sparing her, as I say, out of this arbitrary need to do so because she is a principal character. So I was kind of pleased how they put that together. It was quite slowly paced, which was unusual for Doctor Who in the last 10 years, that it didn't actually move at any faster pace than the rest of the episodes of the series. It took a long time before you got to actually see anything. There was a lot of build-up. And again, whether this was actually a callback to the classic show and to the pace of the BBC shows back in the 70s, 60s, 70s and 80s, where there wasn't the money to do fast pace, so scenes were extended and were very dialogue-driven purely because they didn't have the money to do anything else. And you'll see acknowledgement of this on several BBC commentaries that the stories were more dialogue-driven, not because there was artistically more merit to it, but simply because they didn't have the money to do other things, so they would situate them into the same set as long as they could. So you're getting that sort of pacing here. But what is interesting, unless their budget was so horrendously cut that they needed to do this, but I don't think that's necessarily the case, the pacing is there intentionally. It's not there necessarily to sort of mediate a lack of funding. It is there because it seems to suit this series. Maybe funding sort of catalyzed it, but it has remained constant throughout this series, and I think that in itself is good for whatever reason. It's very, very effective. It gives a feeling of a show which isn't having to perform. It is a show that is... I don't know what's the opposite of performing. I suppose it's not performing like a jester. It's performing like a novel. It feels like it's a show that doesn't... It is not responding to the needs of its audience. It's a show which is giving the audience something, and it's up to the audience to enjoy it or not. It doesn't feel like it's capitulating to an audience. And that's where a lot of shows seem to go these days, because the audiences are so important to a show's survival and to its relevance, that the end the show starts to turn inward on itself, trying to capitulate to what an audience demands rather than what the show might be able to give to an audience which is fresh. And this season certainly feels like it's trying to give the audience something fresh. And that is something really that has to be commended again. And as we've said before, there's something really wonderful in this series for people like myself, as a sort of, I suppose you'd call as a Who critic, as me and Christian have talked about before, rather than a fan. There's something rather wonderful to be actually able to sit here and just be able to talk so much positive about the same era. You know, there's not been a massive change in the hierarchy of this production, and it's been really, really good. And that's just such a nice thing to be able to sort of sit here and compliment, rather than sit here and pull apart. And people think that you're pulling apart just because you want attention, which is far from. We pull it apart because we don't like something, we don't think something quite works. We'll say it's good because we really do think something works. And it's lovely to be in that position where you can say, hey, this is really good. This is really what I think the show is really excelling. And it's a kind of a shame that the audiences aren't perhaps reflecting that. But I think retrospectively, this season will, if it carries on as it is carrying on, will be seen and regarded with a very high critical appreciation. And I think that's something that hopefully all involved will be very proud of. I think I'll also throw a bit of a compliment to the setting as well. I mean, while this was an Earth-based one, after a contemporary Earth-based one compared to the last three that were a mixture of different times and outer space, largely, this one felt in tone with the rest of it. I think situating him at the university, as we've said in previous podcasts, has been a real boon for it. For the show, I don't think there's anything wrong with situating the Doctor as a fixed point rather than a wandering character, especially in the last few series where to some degree he's been forced to be a fixed point because he keeps sort of allocating his position with wherever the companion lives. But to actually have him have his own space in a university with his own backdrop conundrum has felt rather intuitive to the nature of this being a sort of mixture of the anthology and the serial that the Doctor Who has become, which is very much the paradigm of most dramas these days, especially with the VOD carrying such a binge-watching quota of its audience that you naturally have this sort of long serialization. Granted that this was going on before VOD became big, but it certainly feels like it's the way that audiences expect out of shows, and it's giving what people expect. Yet at the same time, it's tonally feeling its ground. And I think having it at the university and the question of the vault doesn't feel, again, contrived. It doesn't feel like it's necessarily overly trying to tease the audience. I mean, obviously it is teasing the audience, but it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like it's a marketing gimmick. I kind of felt with Missy. I certainly felt with Rose returning in Series 4 that there was that feeling of marketing there, that this would get audiences talking, this would get critics talking, this would get Radio Times doing large articles of who is Missy and the like, which are sort of part and parcel of our marketing these days, the sort of the clickbait culture. This obviously has elements of that, but it feels more fitting within the storylines. With the Missy thing, Missy was not... No, okay, yeah, fair enough. Missy was relevant to the storylines in the way that they all dovetailed to the final arc. But somehow that felt slightly contrived because it didn't feel like they were really part of the ongoing story. They were sort of invasive parts which would be resolved at the end of the story, or at the end of the series. And by doing so, they weren't really connecting the storylines. They felt like they were sort of being added like additional elements to an already preconceived story. So you'd have your story set in space, the end outcome would be finished, but one part of that story would then be plucked out at the end in the epilogue and say, hey, this is something we should be thinking about with this character, Missy. Let's see where this goes. That feels contrived. This, with the vault being set in the place where the Doctor lives, it feels like it's part of an ongoing narrative, that the Doctor now lives in this university. We don't know why. That is interesting. It propels us on in a serial nature, but it doesn't feel like it's being dropped in to tease you into keep on watching. It's part of why you are watching. And I think that's a very subtle difference, but I think it does make a big difference in the nature of the show and how the show is coming across. I think that's really good. I'm trying to think of things that I wasn't over keen on. There wasn't that much. There was a few obvious quick setups. We can look at the Suchard character appearing outside the rental, the estate agents, to offer them a place to live. I suppose that was a bit of a contrivance. But beyond that, there wasn't really anything that I had much issue with. And overall, I preferred last week. I think I probably preferred the week before as well. I like them all, to be honest. I think this worked for what it was trying to do. And it was different enough to the others to feel like it had its place in the series. And while it pulled on things which Doctor Who has done before, it felt like it wasn't overhashing or rehashing old ideas particularly. It felt like it was a nice mix, and there was a nice amount of drama at the end. The mother-son was actually quite sad. It was quite heartbreaking. In its own bizarre sci-fi sort of way. So it had emotional content, it had enough action and suspense, it had enough characterization, its tone was consistent, it felt different to the other episodes, which I'm hoping the series will manage to do this year, is to make everyone feel like it's exploring a new facet or a different facet. And certainly the trailer seemed like they were trying to push this point, that this was going to have a large variety to the stories in both tone and spatial and temporal locations. And this has been another example of them doing that very well. So, yeah, I'm really happy. I think this is a great piece of work. I think Moffat's team has excelled itself. I think Capaldi and Mackie, as the principals, have done a great job again. Really strong stuff. There's always that fear that it's suddenly going to go downhill. There's always that fear there's going to be the episode that doesn't quite work, and I'm sure that will occur. But it can't be perfect. But so far, this is the sort of era of... This is the response to the Davis era and to the classic era that I was kind of hoping would get in 2010. It's been a few years, but it's certainly being delivered, and I sort of say hats off to all on board. I'd give this a good 8 out of 10, I think.
So there you go, that's James McLean's thoughts on Knock Knock, the fourth episode of Doctor Who Series 10. And given that this is a series that's 12 episodes long, that means we are a third of the way through. Yeah. Now there's a bit of vault action in Knock Knock towards the end. Well, at the beginning as well. But particularly towards the end. So there's a bit of vault action in Knock Knock, particularly or especially towards the end when the Doctor turns up with a Chinese takeaway for whoever's in the vault. And we're kind of teased into thinking, lulled into thinking, that the occupant of the vault is Missy. No idea why she would be there. Why the Doctor would have chosen to keep her in a vault rather than, I don't know, go back to Gallifrey with her, whatever. We don't know. We will find out, no doubt. So that's a big topic of discussion. And the comments over on our Facebook page, and thanks to all of you great people who have taken the time to comment, there's a lot of interest about the vault. Of course, it's all speculation at this point. I mean, the whole half a pound of tuppenny race on the piano kind of suggests it might be the Master or Missy being interested in the story of some young people dying. But, we're not going to jump into any conclusions. Or jump to any conclusions. I don't think you can jump into conclusions. Well, perhaps you can. Perhaps you can. I think I like this comment from Nick Caulfield, who mentions one or two reservations, or refuses to mention one or two reservations. But he's basically saying that he loved the setting, enjoyed the performances. It won't go down as one of the greats, but it'll stand rewatching, which is more or less what I said. So it's always interesting to find other people having the same opinion of you, completely separate. Gareth Lloyd considers it a good but not great episode. Well done, but it all felt a bit familiar, and there seems to be no real consistency to Capaldi's performance from week to week. But I definitely prefer when he tones down the grumpiness. Yeah, I think there's something in the performance of the Doctor in that he's placed in a particular way, in a particular place by the companion. His refusal to engage with, you know, the mystery, getting all Scooby Gang, all that kind of thing. So that's possibly what was going on there. Whether it's the right decision or not from the actors and the director, I don't know. Stephen Dorr found it not perfect, but enjoyable. David Suchet was excellent, one of the best special guest performances I can recall, he says. Now, a few months ago, and repeatedly over the years, I suppose, on the podcast with a K, we've discussed how modern Doctor Who doesn't rely on arch-villains. Rather, it relies on returning villains, such as, you know, the classics. The Master, Davros and the Daleks, Sontarans, Autons, to an extent, Cybermen. We don't have... Although there have been amazing guest appearances, Stephen Burkhoff, for instance, in Series 7, 7A, there hasn't been any arch, really good villains. David Bradley in the same run of episodes was good, but there hasn't been really, you know, there's no Morbiuses, there's no Sutex, there's no Harrison Chases, there's no really memorable one-off villains in Doctor Who. I think that David Suchet's landlord will be remembered as a memorable villain in Doctor Who. Misunderstood, yes. Not a raving lunatic murderer, just wanted to save his mother. You know, there's a whole other story in there, and what he's been doing over the years into detail, and how he got away with it. I mean, go down that path. It's quite a fascinating character. Miles away from your Harrison Chases and your Masters and people like that. So it isn't there yet, but I think we Doctor would be brilliant if it just went back to making, in my opinion, the villains the focus of the story rather than what the companion's up to this week, you know? You know, there's something there that needs to be mined, that hadn't been mined for about 30 years. Now would seem to be a good time to go back to that. We'll see what Chris Chibnall does next year. We'll see. Some great comments from our Facebook readers, our Facebook followers. So thank you to all of you for taking the time to comment. Brian Terranova, my good friend from Florida, he has his own thoughts on Knock Knock, and he's going to share them with us now.
It started out okay, and I want to say from the off, it's not a bad episode. It was actually, you know, it's been in line with the rest of this season, where it's been good but not fantastic. I was a little surprised to see another character made of wood so soon after Moffat had already done a similar thing twice in his era with a wooden Cyberman, and then, of course, the wood creatures in the Narnia ripoff episode. Bill again was good. I liked a lot of the comedy in the beginning with the Doctor being her grandfather / her father, just as a cover kind of thing, because that could be a very awkward situation, having a student with a professor as a friend. Aside from that, the ending was not really worth it for me. It works. It's okay, but having everybody be reconstituted at the end rather than be dead kind of negated all of the fear and all of the horror of the episode. There's nothing to worry about if you can get everybody back. If all you have to do is talk to the threat, then and make them realize, hey, what you're doing is wrong, then there's no actual threat in the episode. All you have to do is wait for everybody to die, find the creature, tell it, hey, what you're doing is a bad thing, and then it'll go, oh, you know what? Here's all the people I killed back, you know, except for those from the previous trips, obviously. And then I suppose aside from that aspect, I felt, again, it was another kind of episode with an accidental kind of situation. Yes, there were these bugs that the kid found that were really causing the issue, but it was once again a misunderstanding. There was no malintent there aside from the son, the curator of the house, or the landlord of the house, however you want to word him. And the malintent there was just keeping his mother alive. You know, it wasn't really like he was a bad guy for bad guy's sake or wanting power. It was for love. And I guess it's six of one, half of the other, as they say. So yeah, overall, it wasn't bad. It was an okay episode, a good setting. I liked the story overall. Once again, not fantastic. Some of the characters were entertaining, but definitely a lot of the best comedy came from the Doctor himself, but this time, once again, well done comedy. Even honestly, the moment that they heard the first scary noise in the closet that turned out to be the Doctor, it was very obvious that it was the Doctor. So it didn't make me sit there and go, oh my God, what's in the closet? But it worked as a good comedic moment, regardless of whether or not you knew it was coming. To me, I knew it was coming the second I heard the noise. But overall, in line with the past few episodes we got, maybe a slight dip down just because it seemed like it reused some ideas and had the all-too-easy happy ending rather than having learned some kind of valuable lesson at the end here. But yeah, that's it. I look forward to next week's, which looks pretty good. And hopefully I will have even more positive things to say about that.
Okay, so that's Brian Terranova's thoughts on Knock Knock, the fourth episode of Doctor Who, Series 10. Now it's ratings time. We will start with Knock Knock, and then we'll do a bit of a recap on what else has been happening. Overnight viewing figures for Knock Knock were 4.32 million, which is a share of 24.9% of the total TV audience. It is a low figure, but more or less 25% of the available audience is not to be sniffed at. Clearly, there is a problem with television on a Saturday night at the moment, as there was back in 2005 prior to the return of Doctor Who. There does seem to be a big hole in the family audience. Where are they? I don't know where they are. I don't know what the answer is to that. But, I mean, that does seem to be where we are. You know, overall, things are low. So that was Thin Ice. That was Knock Knock. Now, the previous week, Smile's official ratings, you'll recall that the first episode of the series hit number 10. Smile, the second episode, hit number 23 with a full figure of 5.98 million viewers. Now, that was BBC's second highest rated show that day, Saturday the 22nd of April. And it is the BBC's eighth top show of the week. So Doctor Who itself isn't in trouble in terms of, you know, aggregated ratings, but, you know, the overnights do continue to be a problem. So Knock Knock did well in Australia as well, and the AI for Knock Knock, Audience Appreciation Index, is 83, which is a good score. Anything over 80 is considered a good score, so that's good to know. Now, Thin Ice, before the week before, that's final figure was 5.61 million, and that came in at number 25, and it was 10th most watched on BBC One and the third most watched show on BBC One that day, the Saturday the 29th of April. So there is a pattern here, it would seem, that Doctor Who is settling into, which seems to be a sub 6 million viewer audience, but doing well for BBC One, which is really failing in the Saturday night battle. Or rather, I should say, it's not failing in Saturday. It's winning the Saturday night battle, but it's not winning families. It's not winning a great deal of viewers. The soaps are getting better ratings midweek than anything is getting, or the most things are getting on a Saturday, apart from Britain's Got Talent, which is hitting 10 million. Saturday night is falling into a lull. So will Chris Chibnall be able to turn that around next year? Will the BBC be able to turn it around next year? Will they be supporting Doctor Who under its new stewardship with suitable programmes either side leading into the show and carrying on throughout the evening? Will they be able to keep that level up? Because it's important that Doctor Who does well, not just for Doctor Who, but for the other shows. And it's important that the shows that are selected to go around it, you know, we don't want any more Don't Scare the Hares with Jason Bradbury. God, I love Jason Bradbury, former gadget show host, but Don't Scare the Hare, come on, move away from that sort of thing. Doctor Who needs to be part of a solid, robust Saturday night schedule, which at the moment on BBC One, it isn't. Concerning. We'll have to see how that turns out. Now then, so that's audience figures. There's a few things I wanted to share with you, dear listener. I stumbled across something on eBay a couple of days ago. What it was, basically, was a custom-made a Mr. Jobel figure from Revelation of the Daleks. Now, this went for £102 on eBay. And I found the idea of custom-made figures absolutely fascinating. So I thought I'd have a look in and see what else is available. There is a lot. There's a custom-made Second Doctor Tomb of the Cybermen figure, for instance, which is basically, to all intents and purposes, it appears to be a standard Second Doctor figure with a cloak on. There's a Black Guardian figure, which I absolutely love the look of, and he's quite tall as well, it would seem, so that's good. There's a White Guardian figure. There's this strange one here. What's this? This is... There's a custom-made Plasmaton, for goodness sake. So, yeah, custom-made figures seems to be a big... there seems to be an audience for these things. There's also a rather curious... a custom figure version of the 11th Doctor, which I'm not entirely sure what's going on with there. So custom Doctor Who figures are a thing, and they're doing well on eBay. So if you can have a look, if you're interested in figurines, take a look at that. There's also a, if you're interested in Daleks, there seems to be someone selling what appears to be a collection of Dennis Fisher 1976 Daleks, because they're selling quite regularly from the same seller. One's just ended for £104, for instance, with three bids. So, you know, not shoddy there. So I don't know if this is a collector who's selling them or a retro toy shop or whatever, but yeah, they're not doing too badly with those, which suggests that there's quite a repository of Dennis Fisher 1976 Daleks somewhere. And finally, this is less Doctor Who, more just sci-fi generally. I don't know if you're aware of the Humble Bundle. You can find out more at humblebundle.com. Especially, it's a charity thing whereby DRM-free electronic media is offered for purchase for a very low price, but you're able to pay as much as you like for it in order to contribute to the charity. Previously, there's been IDW have done a Humble Bundle with Doctor Who Comics. Currently, there is a vast collection of titles from some of the greatest names in science fiction. Okay, these are to raise funds for the Sci-Fi Writers Association Givers Fund, which is a thing that takes place amongst sci-fi writers, and then the funds are then donated to wherever. So there's a massive collection of books here. There's Doorways by George R. R. Martin. There's Venus Prime by Arthur C. Clarke. There is pretty much every science fiction author you can think of. Harlan Ellison is in there. Isaac Asimov is in there. Neil Gaiman is in there. There's a vast collection of books. Now, if you were to pay $1, then you get six. Beg pardon, you get eight. Pay $8 and you increase to about 20 or so. $15, you get furthermore books added to the library, and so on and so forth. So that's currently on humblebundle.com. That, dear listener, brings us to the end of this podcast with a Christian. I will be back next week, hopefully with my cohorts virtually by my side. I will leave you for this week by playing you out with the trailer for Doctor Who Series 10, Episode 5, oxygen.
Mining station, Chasm. Forge, crew of 40.
Hello?
4 survivors. 1 distress call. They were killed by their own suits.
That means there's 36 corpses walking about this station.
If we want to keep breathing, we have exactly one option.
None of us have more than 3,000 breaths left.
Then stop wasting them.
This is a Beyond Casterbrews podcast. Available on iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrews.com.